too well. There's probably another microphone at work, isn't it? Sorry for this. Didn't check the audio before I started here. It's way too high. Is this better? Maybe it's working. Let's try. So many things to remember here. Where was I? We can't change the hours here for this seminar, so we'll have to stick to this, but there aren't that many classes like this anyway. Most of the stuff goes online, so hopefully you can follow it anyway. The topic today, we'll go further into some of the what's considered some central terminologies, things that's talked about a little bit online as well on the lectures, but we'll give a bit more examples in this session. We'll talk about the formulating a research problem, etc. We'll talk about the term variables and different types of variables. We'll talk about, or at least briefly, about topics like reliability and validity also in this session. In addition, I will also introduce you to the two of the things you're going to do in addition to the lectures and following the lectures in this course, and that is a short paper assignment that is to be delivered by the end of the month. And we'll talk about a project that you'll do in groups, at least those of you who are on-campus students. Those who follow the, or those who are off-campus students, will then have an additional or an alternative type of task to do there. So that's more or less what we're going to do today. I forgot one thing last time. I guess you've heard this in all classes. There is a need for reference groups in all classes. Part of the our quality assurance system, so a reference group, they are supposed to be the link between we who teach the course and students for each of the classes that we do. And it's not a big thing, it's not a big task. You are to write a very short report afterwards or come back to me with things that's worrying you or that hasn't worked or whatever. So I'm just raising this issue now, and if there are volunteers for this position, we need, ideally there should be three of you there, ideally also from different classes or different study programs, if possible. Yes, volunteer already, or an answer volunteer. So then you can come back, come to me in the break, and then I'll remind you after a break as well. Good? So at least then we have someone. That's nice. So the starting point, of course, for all types of research we do is that we wonder about something. That we have issues that we question, that we want to go further into. And of course, this is a starting point for all types of research. The ideas for these can come from very many places. Maybe ideally, I'm not sure if it's ideal, but very often it comes from research that others have done and that you are getting invited into. But of course, ideally this is something that comes out of your head and your interests. But the general thing then is that a research problem tends, at least in the beginning, to be a very broad issue, usually a way too broad issue. How can I? Well, let's give an example of a recent project that's been where interaction design students have done stuff together with information security, for instance. That's been projects on how to identify and communicate and how technically develop and raise awareness about the problem of kids being exploited on the net by predators in social media, for instance, which is a technical issue. Algorithms for automatic detection of text that identify people as possible cheaters. You're not 14-year-old Linda, but you're 59-year-old Frode or whatever. That can be a technical issue, but it can also be a communicative issue. It can be about how to design an interface that communicates this to kids, how to have an interface towards parents that wants to be aware of these issues. So you can't have a high-level research question that they're saying, I'm making something to, I'm trying to avoid kids being exploited on the net by predators. That's a way too broad thing. So usually you need to narrow things down to something very specific to your area. And that is one of the maybe main challenges we face whenever we are looking at, for instance, a master's project. Many of these master projects, and this is something you will hear from your supervisors usually, narrow things down. Try to ask a question that's actually researchable, that's narrow enough for you to actually go into the question. That's one of the main issues we have. But let's first define then what is a research problem. It's usually a sentence that should end up in some kind of a question. At least it should be possible to rephrase it into a question. So it's not just a theme, a topic. It's something more narrow than that. It should be some kind of a sentence that actually asks a question. How can we communicate? How should an interface be to communicate to 14-year-olds that they are under threat or something like that? I'm not sure if that's a good formulation, but that could be that's at least narrower down than the whole theme that has to do with the topics we talk about. There are a few other things that we should, that's part of this definition. For instance, it says that the variables that we talk about, they should express some kind of a relationship. Something should be related to something else. So you should maybe be able to say that by using a symbol that kids are familiar with, I can more easily create awareness or something. Let's see, if I use a smiley face or something like that, or combined with a color, well, that will help ease the tension about the warnings that you get or something like that. That would be a more, then you say something is related to something else. in my field, we have had these issues when it comes to people's use of technology all the time. We say that, for instance, excessive gaming or lots of video gaming leads to more violent kids or inattentive kids. Then you have something that leads to something else. And that should be part of an ideal research problem that you state. Then you have a question, and that can be addressed further, so you can go into these issues. I say that it should be possible to empirically test this. Well, as I said last time, not all questions have a straight answer. But at least you should express a relationship between variables that allows you to discuss this relationship and shed light on the relationship between variables at some level. In real life, these research problems, they tend to be rather large. That doesn't mean that we need to throw away the initial theme. The theme is necessary very often to be able to define the background for a research problem. We define a research problem that's researchable, but we have a big carpet behind this that also needs to be investigated further. And that describes the whole theme. So this is necessary. But in order to do actual research on a topic, you usually need to decompose things into things that's researchable. And as I said, a general issue, problem, I'm not sure if it's a problem, it's a general thing, it goes with all research. We tend to start out with very high ambitions compared to what we actually are able to answer. So spending a lot of time at trying to narrow down something into something that's possible to give an answer to is... it's worthwhile, the effort of doing it. It is also necessary in order to, for instance, make a good master thesis that actually tells what answer it's giving and actually is able to do it. I've used the term variables now a few times. Or one step back before I take this. I say if you have seen the plan today, it said something about an example of a master thesis. We made a good, there was a good presentation of this last year, so I made the recording of that part available on Blackboard. You might have seen it there. There's a link to a lecture given by a student, Giovanni Pignoni, last year, who did his master thesis the year before that, before he worked here as a research assistant for a year. He did a study that was something somewhere in the borders between several disciplines. It was partly the type of informatics technical issue. He was developing a tool, an eye tracking based tool that measured pupil diameter and used pupil diameter as an indicator of mental workload. And he did this in a context, of course, what the pupil usually reacts to. It reacts to two things, at least. It reacts to arousal, human arousal, so a general arousal system we have internally. But most of all, it reacts to light, of course. So you have to take out the effect of light in this equation. So he made technologies there. He tested out the algorithms in a technical way, but he also did field studies in his master's thesis. And with different questions asked, that could be a type of a master's thesis that could go, could be done in many disciplines. In this case, he was an interaction design student. It could have been in applied computer science, and I'm sure there are safety or security issues involved there as well. At least there are algorithms involved. So I made that recording available, and I think it could be interesting for you to listen to it, because he also there focuses on how to narrow down the research question quite a bit. So he's not going to present here now, as he left us a month ago for another job. But the recording is available, and you should find it in Blackboard on the list of themes for the seminars. Yes, and another little bridge here. In the end, now today, I'm going to talk a little bit about the first assignment that you're given. This first assignment is that you should read a couple of papers made available to you, and those two papers you're going to analyze these papers and identify certain central terminologies and discuss it. And one of the things that you are required to ask to find in these papers are these terms that we phrase here. For instance, variables. What are variables? What do we mean by variables? And in our context, we have, you could say, three main groups of variables that we refer to all the time when we refer to research. And these are the independent variable, the dependent variable, and a group of things that's also variables that may affect the relationship between the independent and the dependent variable. We'll usually call them mediating and moderating variables, third variables that affects the situation. And it seems straightforward, but when you read a paper, it's now and then quite difficult to people do mistakes when they are to say what these two means. It should be pretty straightforward. The independent variables is either what you have or what you try to change, while the dependent variable is the outcome. So if I want to see if boys and girls score differently on some kind of a test, well, then I need to one step back. Boys and girls will then be the independent variable. That's an a priori variable that we have there in the situation. And the outcome, let's just, how well they score when they do, when they play a game or something like that, that's how fast they run. That's the dependent variable. So that's what you measure in a situation. And it's when we ask, when we phrase a research problem, for instance, we always phrase that we always include an independent variable and a dependent variable in the question that we ask. So these two should be pretty straightforward to identify. independent, and dependent doesn't mean that it's fixed and it varies. Both of these can vary. Both can actually be pretty fixed. It's very difficult, of course, if the dependent variable is a fixed variable, because then it's impossible to say much. But in theory, maybe it could, if there wasn't any difference. But anyway, many of these independent variables are, you could say, are a priori things that's in the situation. But let's say that you make an experiment, a classic experiment. You see whether you want to check whether, let's take Giovanni's example of this thesis that I was talking about. He wanted to see if he could take, let's say, take the effect of light out of the equation so that what's left for him is mental workload when he takes a measurement of the pupil diameter. So he has an algorithm that has an external sensor that takes input from an external sensor and the point of view, the gaze point, and takes that out of the effect of light out of the changes of pupil diameter. In his case, what he did then to check out whether this was possible to do was that he set up a series of experiments where he took control of the light in the beginning. He knew how much light he was showing to the participant. So he was introducing a new variable, a new version of the independent variable. That was the amount of light on a white screen in front of the viewer. And he had then a sinusoid change of that. So we could take that out of the equation in the end and see whether he had some mental workload left in the equation. And he had, of course, an additional task there to vary mental workload as well. So he introduced these two things as independent variable into the equation and measured the outcome, which was actual mental workload. So an independent variable can both be something that exists and something that you put into the equation in some way. We'll get back to examples of different independent and dependent variable, and you can test this out yourself. But we could try this initially. One thing that many find quite difficult, and which is kind of challenging when you are dealing with the relationship between independent and dependent variables, is that you need to be very precise on saying what do we actually mean when we put words into the problem formulation here, the research problem. Some of the words we put in there may be quite vague. They can have many different interpretations. So actually what we tend to call this operationalization, making things into concretes of the concepts and variables that we're putting into the research statement. That's a really important issue to include here. What do we mean by the terms that we use? So we have a statement like this one. It's way back in time, but I'm older than you. So I remember that there were Olympic Games in Lillehammer, close to here, not too many years ago. 10 for me, 20 in reality. Did Lillehammer well make people in this region more happy? Let's say we say something like that. In this sentence, we have a clear independent and a dependent variable. Anyone who can identify these? Anyone who tries? No. We have an independent here, which is before and after something happens. So the appearance of Lilla Miruel in time results in more happiness, is what we say. So before and after, for instance, or if it was here, if it wasn't here, results in more happiness. Happiness is then the dependent variable. Now comes the problem, of course. What are the issues we need to... does anyone see any issues here that we need to go more in detail on? We have a very fussy one here now. And the fussy term is yes. Happy is quite a vague formulation, yes, to be... What do we mean by happiness? And to be able to do any research at all on issues like this, well, you need to, what do we say, operationalize them, be concrete on this. What's meant by happiness? I'll give you examples so you can try this yourself now, afterwards. In this case, this has been done, and there are many ways to address this. So, happiness can be, for instance, defined as the outcome of the answers to a standardized questionnaire that is well known to measure happiness generally in a population. Get it? That could be such an answer. That could be such a definition. So a formulation here: Did Lilla Miruel make people in this region more happy as measured on the general measurement scale for happiness or whatever it's called? That would be a specification of the terms here. But it could be something else, of course. And that will define the methods that you use very much. So usually this is part of formulating this has to do with how you have instruments and how you define the methodology that you want to use. Part of it has to do with theory. How have others tried to measure these things? Are there a general approach to the measurement of happiness around? Is there a very research paradigm existing for how to do these types of research, and that might define how you want to do this, or you might be very creative. Let's say that you measure happiness here as going around and counting smiles in a time window or something like that in the main street of Lilame. Could be. So it's more or less up to you to be creative on these issues, to find the right way of doing this. Or not find the right way, because there usually aren't any right and wrong ways. There are good and bad ways, maybe. But in general, what's important here is that you actually describe it in a good way. You say how you interpret this. What do we mean by the variables that we put into these equations? And in many cases, well, maybe you need to to even be more, go more in detail. You may want to you may want to have several different definitions, operationalizations of, for instance, a dependent variable. So you may want to address things in different ways and compare them. But anyway, you need to be precise on how you do this, why you do this. Why is it important both to measure how people, what people say about their happiness and how they behave, for instance, which might be an important distinction. And then you need maybe different ways to measure these two. But you can't have these methods unless you have a very clear and distinct definition of what we are dealing with. And usually the more fussy and the more complex a variable is, the more decomposition, the more you have to chop up and define the variable that we are dealing with. You could say maybe if we rephrase this the research problem we have in this case, maybe we could also end up with a situation where different interpretations leads to different ways of measuring or defining the independent variable. In this case, we have an independent variable called Lillehammer, or we have Lillehammer OL. And we also say something about region. Maybe we can, by defining this enough, maybe we could say that we are comparing regions. So maybe it affects, let's say, the regions around Lillehammer in a negative way, while people in Lillehammer became more happy. So even though you have a pretty straightforward research question here, it's not that straightforward if you want to go more into detail around it. And let's just try to use two examples here. And I'll give you a few minutes to think about this now. We have two different statements that I want you to think about. I want you to do two things. I want you to identify the independent and the dependent variables in these two research questions, or the one is at least more of a hypothesis. Both are quite close to what we could call a research hypothesis because it says something about outcomes. So it's not actually questions, it's more, in this way it's formulated more like a research or a hypothesis for an outcome. So, but that has more to do with semantics than anything. So we can read them with a question mark instead. So we can, for instance, say, does a specific attitude campaign reduce speeding on highways? We have these, you may have seen around, people who drive in Norway have seen these signs that's used on the side there. Does that affect speeding on certain stretches of a road? What is the independent and the dependent variable? And which of these, and how should the terms that we put into this, the variables we put into this, be defined. And we have one more, for instance, that's in maybe seems just as easy. Doing meditation, will that make us into better humans? So spend 3-4 minutes now thinking about these. Discuss it with people you know around you. What would the independent and the dependent variables be? And which of the terms that we involve here should be further operationalized? And maybe I have suggestions for how to do it as well. A few minutes. So, does the over the speed limit campaign reduce speeding on highways? Any suggestions? What is the independent variable? There must be someone who can identify an independent variable here. Try it. There is one. The campaign, of course. It is having a campaign or not having a campaign. And in this, you agree that in this case, this is pretty straightforward because we have identified the campaign as well. We've said that it's this campaign, the over the speed limit campaign, is that affecting speeding. That's straightforward. And the independent is the other variable, of course. Speeding on highways, maybe, to be more precise. That's what we say here. So, any suggestions? What we do? Do we need further operationalization of these terms? I know it's Friday morning. No, we don't need it, you say? You sure about that? What is speeding? You say that maybe there was some small nose here. Speeding on highways. Actually, it's not that straightforward. What we mean by speeding? Is that the mean speed? Is it the number of people that drive more than 20, 30 kilometers over the speed limit? These are different interpretations. These are different operationalizations of what we mean by speeding. because maybe reducing the mean speed by a couple of kilometers isn't important. What's important is to take down the highest 1% of the speed or something like that. Maybe that's a good outcome. And what do we mean by highways? Is this working the same way on different types of road standards in different regions, whatever, in different age groups? Well, that's a moderating variable. Maybe we'll get back to that. So even though the first one seems pretty straightforward, it's not necessarily this straightforward to do research based on a formulation like this. We need to be more precise on what we need by speeding. But even though this is pretty straightforward, right? But take the next one. Anyone? Independent? Let's try the first row here. What's the independent variable?
Meditation,
yes, of course. That's the independent. And what's the independent then? Better humans? At least that's what we say here. But is it enough? Can we actually make a thesis based on this statement? Yes? What is a better human? That has to do with the dependent variable, right? What do we mean by being a better human? Less aggressive, more happy, more willing to pay taxes, kinder to the kids, getting more kids, I'm not sure. Taking the race or taking the population further. It could be many things. Better human, more happy, maybe more satisfied with themselves, getting higher wages. There could be numerous things that it's hard to get you into the discussion here today. So I try to go on with some of these possible interpretations, and you may have other ideas of creative things here. That could be, of course, has to do with better humans. Yes? Yeah, but of course. But that would be rephrasing things again then. But still, I think it's hard to get away from the fact that the type of attitude campaign is still an independent variable. But you may have different types of independent variables. You may have this one, which is more or less an a priori one that exists. It's there now. But you can also have a before and after, and you can even compare two different campaigns and see the results of these two campaigns in different situations, for instance. So there are many ways to do this. But you need to be precise on this. And in the second one, even though in the first one we say that it's pretty okay, attitude campaign in some version is an independent. It's what we either put into or observe in this or if observe the effect of in a situation. While the second one can be even more complicated, because what is meant by meditation? It's probably, I'm not an expert on the field, but I know there are many schools around for this. You can do yoga, that's a form of a meditation, somebody will say. Transcendental meditation, mindfulness. You could have a school that looks at fish in an aquarium and calls that meditation, for all I know. There are a number of different possible even definitions of the independent variable in this case. So we need to be... In some cases, we also need to be specific on how we define the independent variable. That's even not obvious in all initial research problems that we state. So in the second case, well, maybe a rephrase could be, I'm just taking this on the fly now, but maybe you could say something about the mindfulness as thought by the International School of Mindfulness or something, results in more, in a higher score when it comes to scores on the emotional satisfactionness scale, trademark someone. That would be a very specific thing, of course, but you get the idea. Sometimes we need to decompose and be precise on the definition of variables. And unless we do this, it's kind of hard to say much about the relationship between independent and dependent variables, because there are so many possible interpretations. Yes. Yeah, but repeatability more than anything. Because the more precise you are, the more secure you can be that people will interpret it in other ways, and at least then you can discuss it further. Well, but you have a too narrow definition of the dependent variable. That's actually not happiness you're measuring there, for instance, to take the previous example. Well, that's something you can discuss then. Create awareness about possible predators out there. Well, that's not really awareness. Knowing things isn't to be afraid of them, for instance. These are necessary ways to go on, and that makes research into something you can either try to repeat, central thing, repeatability that we talked about last time, and of course, taking research further on, and then be able to rephrase maybe even better definitions in the next round. Okay, we've gone over time here now, so let's take a break, a good 10-minute break, and meet again 15 minutes, or, yeah, 15 minutes. 10 minutes break is enough. So 9:15. Computers. I'm trying to get the
So is it possible to combine? Maybe we sure. can discuss it further, later.
Yes, we can.
Okay, I'll write you. Okay, and thank you.
I'm sitting down at the Mysta.
Yes.
Yeah, you know. Thank you. Then we. Try this and see if it records anyway. You can hear this one, right? So it's just for the recording. We need to have some kind of a microphone. I can try to stand here and be a bit more quiet. To go on with the. With our digging into independent and dependent variables. We also say that these, in order to have a research question, these variables needs to state some kind of a relationship. So in this, say that let's use the attitude campaign. We state that there is a relationship between, let's say we've been good researchers. We're doing good research here. So a group of researchers, they have been able to measure that the mean speed of drivers is reduced when after a specific campaign was launched between here and Lillehammer, for instance. There is a highway stretch there. They put up some kind of a hidden instrument to measure speed, which is done now and then on highways. Doesn't lead to any, it doesn't have any consequences for individuals usually. Some of these measurements are done there just to measure, for instance, mean speeds. And they measure an effect. There is a relationship. But the question then is there necessarily a causal relationship? And that's not necessarily straightforward, even though you can see a relationship, even though you can measure a relationship between variables. Because we have two types of difficulties involved here. One is called the problem of cause and effect. What leads to what? And the other has to do with possible mediating variables that may affect the situation, or moderating variables that may affect the situation. An example that we use now and then when it comes to causal explanations has to do with how we can, you could say, let's say a phenomenon that's occurred now and then through history when new media has arrived is that we try to there is a tendency that we say that there are negative effects linked to these new media. When TV came around, having kids spending time watching TV led them to be more violent. There was a relationship between violence and kids watching TV. But this has been questioned by many, many times. It's not the first time this thing has appeared, of course. I guess the same came when TV was available in other ways, when video came around, which maybe was more violent, and you can repeatedly see the same stuff. You had the same problem when, of course, computer games came around. play excessive gaming led to more aggressive kids. And many early studies were able to state this relationship. You could see a relationship. For instance, you could have good research saying that kids who spent a lot of time alone at home watching TV showed more aggressive behaviors towards fellow kids in schools, as measured by observations and as reported by peer observations, kids watching kids and reporting things. You found these relationships quite early. But the problem here is then something we call the direction problem. Is it necessarily a cause-effect relationship we are observing? Because, or could there be other interpretations? And in this case, the other interpretation that's possible is, of course, that no, it's not TV viewing that leads to more violence. It's violent kids that watch more TV. So this is something we always should be a bit aware of when we read and try to interpret research findings. When they say something about the relationship between variables, are we absolutely sure that they have controlled for the right configuration of these things? Because in order to say something about this, well, you probably need to apply different methods that tries to control for these factors in different ways. So let's go a step back and take the example of the attitude campaign. We have launched an attitude campaign, this speeding or this campaign above the speed limit ? Does that reduce speeding? Yes, the researchers said. We measured speed before and after we launched this campaign. Is it necessarily so that we can directly interpret a causal relationship between the campaign and the speed? Or do we need to know more in order to understand whether this is a true connection that we have measured here? What do you think? Are there possible problems here? You're not very talkative on Friday mornings. There is one in the back. Good. Yes, there could be other types of drivers involved, but maybe, yes? Weather conditions could have been different.
Time?
Maybe they did first measurement in the morning and rush hours, the second one in at midday or at night with little traffic. I don't think so. But you need to know these things. There are so many other possible explanations involved here. Well, we have. I'm trying to list up a few here, and these are not necessarily a complete list of possible things. But of course, history is a factor, as well. Maybe something else has happened. Maybe there was some kind of an accident on these streets the week before they did the after measurement. Maybe that raised the awareness and reduced speeding. Maybe something else, there is usually a before, when you have a before and after, there is time involved. And you need to be sure about the time thing here. So there might be competing explanations. When you measure developmental things, for instance, let's say you try to launch a campaign that should enhance literacy among kids in some way. The before and after, if you do this, if you take a before and after on the same kids, before and after a campaign, which would be the obvious thing to do. Well, these kids have matured as well. Maybe time has passed there. So maybe they will become better by themselves, by being exposed to something. And this is, for instance, quite relevant when it comes to computer literacy and new technology, because by getting used to technology in itself will probably enhance our skills and at least change the behaviors that we show. So yeah, you have to be quite aware of these things, and in good research you try to take control over these possible alternative explanations of something. You might have test effects in itself that affects the conclusions that you get to. It might very well be that having just being aware that you are being measured. When people see a policeman trying to measure the speed on the side of the street, they reduce speed. That's a natural thing to do. When they see some kind of an instrument that to do this, they try to reduce the speed, or if you know that there are no consequences, maybe even they speed up, for all I know. But it might have consequences. To know that you're being measured, you're probably all aware of something called the Hawthorne effect, which is used quite often as an example of this, where the productivity of workers in a factory, I think it was a light bulb factory, the Hawthorne factory, were measured for productivity when they changed the environmental variables. They changed the overall lighting, they changed the speed of their work, they changed the, I think, they did many things. They changed how people were paid and did stuff like that to see whether that these things had effect on productivity in the plant. And the findings in this, they refer to the Hawthorne effect, I think it's overly simplified, but they say that whatever they tried to measure, whatever change they did, resulted in improved productivity acutely afterwards. And then it dropped again. So anything you do, more or less, just being aware that you are being measured for productivity increases productivity. So it's a factor. That's usually what we can call a test effect. So, of course, the strategy there is to keep things blind, make people unaware that they're being measured in some way, or make conditions the same whether you are measured before and after. So keeping things stable is usually the way to do this. Changes in the measurement instrument, that's of course an obvious thing, but you also have something called the regression effects, and that's more like a statistical phenomena. If you do one observation only, and a few observations only, there is the statistics will imply that it's a higher risk for that observation to be more extreme than if you measure things over a longer period of time, where things will fall back to normality, because observations tend to follow a normal distribution. So there are always errors when you do measurements, and the chance for these errors to appear is larger when you have few observations compared to when you have many observations. So there are many possible ways to challenge the relationship, the causal relationship between variables and the interpretations you do. The thing is, you need to be very precise on describing how you measured things, so it's repeatable and so people can answer, can really question these things. So when you say there is a relationship between kids' gameplay, excessive gameplay with violent games, and their actual violent behaviors, well, you have to show the readers how you have interpreted these things. One is that you have to define the variables, of course, how you measure this, but you also need to say something about things you maybe have controlled for. Have you controlled for socioeconomic factors like parents' educational levels, parents' income level, the number of friends people have, different interpretations of violence. It could be many things, but you need to say this when you say how you've done your research and how you made your conclusions. So it can't be questioned, or so at least when it can be questioned in a concrete way, ideally. So of course the strategy for a lot of these things, if you are to when you do experiments, is to make controlled experiments where you have control groups. That's where some is exposed to something, some aren't. It can't always be. A lot of cases you can't do this, but if you can, this is the gold standard of controlling for things. So when you're controlling for the effect of a vaccine, you need someone who don't get the vaccine. And that's a control group type of experiment. Now, the next thing is, even though we show relationship between variables, it's not necessarily a true relationship we're seeing. And this is, we draw, there are numerous examples of errors done on this, where we draw falsely conclusions based on kind of the fact that we observe that two things vary together. So the change in one independent variable results in a change in a dependent variable. Temperature or ice cream sales is related to the number of shark attacks in Australia. It's easy to find. If you know the ice cream sales and you know the number of shark attacks that appears, you will see a relationship. But does that mean that sharks like ice cream? Of course not. It just means that there is a third moderating variable involved. Probably then. Maybe sharks like ice cream for all I know. But I think a more obvious thing has to do with the existence of moderating or mediating variables. So in this case, we have a moderating variable that also affects this, which is that the weather is nice and the water is warm. So people go out swimming. And I'm not sure if I should try to explain the next one. But there is a link there to a site where all these what we call spurious correlations are listed up. And there are many interesting things when it comes to the relationship between these things. So try that one. We call them spurious correlations often. But you also have a problem. We talk about cause effect here, but this specifically goes also for correlations. We have the generally this what we tend to call the direction problem, We have talked about it, but we can compare that to the third variable problem and say something about the what do we mean by this? When we try to say something about causality and direction and cause effect, we say that there are numerous ways that what we have been discussing a lot here now are these third variables. A third variable, for instance, in this speeding example, is that could be weather. Weather was a good example of this. Okay. Siri, woke up. We're talking about third variables, and we're either talking about what we could call, and the book is specific on this, it's more vaguely in I think in everyday connections, on the difference between a moderating and a mediating variable. So in this example, you can say that a third variable, if we use that as a general description of how other things might affect the relationship between variables, this other thing can affect variables in many ways. And of course, the ideal situation is a situation like the first one, where it is highly irrelevant. It doesn't affect relationship between variables. The attitude campaign reads to, or something. Weather doesn't affect this. While in the other case, we are talking, it's partly an effect. Then we are, I think, usually referring to it as a moderating variable. It moderates the relationship between variables. It affects it. Both are important. Both affect the outcome. And in order to control for this, we may need statistical techniques to take out the effect of the third variable. For instance, if you have a control group, the third variable will probably affect the two groups in equal ways. So then we can statistically take out that effect as part of the equation. But it could also be that you could say the third variable needs to be there for something to happen, and then we tend to call it a mediating variable because it needs to be in between, or it needs to be there in order for a relationship to appear. So that is another way to look at third variables, but the last one here, for instance, is an example where you could say it's there behind both both the cause and the effect. So it's actually affecting both of them. I don't know if I have good examples, but we have, for instance, we have been measuring a lot of. I've been involved in several studies where we have measured, you could say, your willingness to be a risk taker and different behaviors, actual behaviors that's not related to the questions that we ask about. In those studies, we have been able to show very strong relationship between numerous types of risk-seeking activities, so number of sexual relationships, number of, for that sake, speeding. We find these connections between what we measure independent. Because they measure as risk-seeking behaviors then, the independent variable usually, we have an instrument to measure risk-seeking, right? And we can define people as high-risk-seekers or low-risk-seekers or safety-oriented people. When it comes to stimuli, when it comes to new stuff, when it comes to how strong stimuli should be. So we have a standardized way of measuring this, and we have a standardized way of categorizing people as high and low. And that will then be the independent variable. So does that lead to different behaviors in real life? And yes, we see a very strong relationship in at least in studies where a lot of people is involved. We have done this in health surveys where all 15-year-olds and different age segments have been measured in a region of Norway, some health surveys health census that's taking place every 4 years, I think. So there are large studies where we have put in this instrument and seen the effect of the instrument. And the problem there is, can this be used as a predictor of people that might get into trouble? People who score high on this thing, will they be? That's more or less that's the background for things. The problem is there is a third variable involved here, which is much stronger than the different, you could say, what we measure on the risk-seeking behavior measurement scale, and that is age. So the younger you are, the more risk-seeking you seem to be. The older you are, the more safety-oriented you are, in general, not individually. And when we do these measurements, we have to be very careful at stating this, that age actually outweighs the effect of what we measure on the sensation-seeking scale. And it's much more important at determining risk-seeking behaviors than the measurement we take there. This was actually the case in this situation. So we learned something about how good these measurements are at for being used in this connection. Well, I'm not sure it was a good example, but... but at least the relationships aren't always as obvious as they seem in the beginning. And this calls for, I would say this is one of the best arguments we have for applying good statistics when we try to interpret relationships. We need to put numbers on the importance and strength of how different variables affect a situation in order for us to say what's most important. So how do we control for these third variables? There are many ways. I said the gold standard is, of course, the situation where things don't vary, where we have an experimental group and a control group, and the experimental group is identical to the control group, and they all get the same, they get treatment blindly. One group gets just a placebo pill, the other group gets a pill that works. So they think they're treated the same way. You take out the measurement error in this, the test error. You make sure that those who gives the pill don't know it either. So you have this very controlled situation, and you balance time. So you maybe have four groups. That's where one group is where. So we can control for time variables as well. We'll get back to these different experimental designs later, and how they can control for many factors. But at least that's the gold standard, of course. But in real life, you don't usually have that type of control. You can do it in some lab studies. You can do it when you're not dealing with humans, for instance, when you are setting up technical experiments. Well, usually you can do these things. you still might have the same fact, some other third variables involved there as well. You can, but in real life you don't have this type of control all the time. But usually you don't have that type of control. And of course the important thing then is to at least record and make sure that you measure all the potential variables that might affect the situation, that you take control of them. That in order to say something about how speeding is reduced after the campaign, you also measure weather conditions. You measure the amount of cars on the road. You measure who the drivers are on different times, as an example was here. So you make sure that you record all these things and put them into the equation when you are dealing with the statistics. This is what the statistics we're doing research is good at, and that is to say something about the individual components that might affect a cause-effect relationship. So we can take out the different factors. Structured and good data collection is what we are after. I'll very soon now get to a little bit about the first assignment that you're having, but just a few words, because one of the questions I asked there in the when you are making this first short paper, in addition to identifying variables and discuss what needs to be operationalized, you should also say something in the end about reliability and validity. And reliability and validity has to do with how certain we are about the conclusions when it comes to the repeatability of a study and the generalizability of a study. So reliability has to do with the consistency of a measurement. So if you did something again, if you did the same thing again, would you get the same results? If you have the example here then, when you have a speedometer in your car and at a given speed, when you drive in a given speed, the instrument on the dashboard always tells you that speed, or tells you a speed. It says 60, right? So whenever you drive at a speed, it gives you a number, 60. And if you have a reliable measurement instrument, that would always give you the number 60 when you travel in that speed. But let's say it always tells you, then you have a reliable measurement. If you actually drive in 80 and you get the measurement 60, you still have a reliable instrument, because it always gives you 60 when you go in I-80. But you don't have a valid measurement then, because it's not correct for the real world situation. So you might of course then have four outcomes when you make a table out of this, of the reliability and validity. The first one has to do with, you can have a reliable measurement that missed the target. Then you have a non-valid measurement, while it is, that's the example I gave. Or you can have a valid one that actually hits the target, that's correct in all ways. But you can also have a non-valid, non-reliable thing, which is of course a big problem. You have measurements all over the place. Whenever you drive in 80, it sometimes tells you 60, sometimes 90. And if that isn't systematic, you don't have generalizability. But you can have things that's, in some cases, that's not really reliable. It's a bit of variability involved. And some measurements are like this. But you can compensate for that as well, of course, by taking many measurements, and the center will be correct. So you can somewhat compensate when it comes to reliability and validity. Question?
I'm coming from engineering.
Yes. Yes, I can't give you an answer on the fly now, but I see that there is an issue there. I guess what you tend to do then is different types of triangulation. So you do things in different ways and try to isolate what's what there. So you do both destructive and non-destructive, and you do it on several samples. Isn't that the strategy? That would be an experimental approach to it. Yes, I get it. It can be difficult. it's not always obvious, this on reliability and validity, and you will find it challenging also in the concrete case, because there are different interpretations. And one thing I want you to think about, and this might have effect on this engineering problem, has to do with internal and external validity. Because when we talk about validity, we can have internal validity with the measurements that we take there and then. When we do the same experiment again, we will get the same results. And we would get the same results on similar situations. But does it also count for the situations that's different, maybe when you don't destroy things? I'm just trying to make this relevant for you now. For instance, if you do an experiment, if you did the same experiment again and tried to say something about the relationship between things, would you get the same results? Well, then you have internal validity. The experiment itself is good. It gives valid results. It gives the same results again and again and again. But is it also true for the things we want to generalize about? Does it also go for this material in the real world? See, that's then external validity. And when you write this paper or write the analysis of the two papers, one paper called "Kansas is Flatter Than a Pancake," where they have done some very good laser measurements on pancakes and stuff, comes from the Journal of Improbable Research. Nice source. I want you to, you go, of course, I want you to think about this. Is it a reliable conclusion they make based on the method they've used? And is it valid internally and externally, the conclusions they make? So internal reliability means that the measurement instrument is trustworthy. That's an interpretation you do. While validity also means, is it true? So I want you to think about that when you do this analysis. The other paper that you will see there is a paper that me and some colleagues did some years ago on the effects of using, everybody does it now, but you've changed from computers to handheld devices in different ways, phones. Does that affect others in the classroom? That's what we asked. So you can read it. It's a short version of a study some colleagues of mine did and we wrote out, where we also have independent and dependent variables and different operationalizations, and it's not necessarily good, so we should have done more and better. So you are to analyze this. I want you to write around 3 pages or something. It's a yes-no thing when I'm when I'm reading this. It's either accepted or not accepted, and if it's not accepted, you will have several chances of doing this correctly. So it's just a checkup that you understand these terms that we are asking about here. I have extended the deadline quite a bit from the beginning, a week or so, because there were some conflicts with other projects in the next week. So I wanted to do this by the 3rd of October. So this is the first assignment, and I think the recording is about to stop now, but I have a few more things to say. But that doesn't necessarily affect those who are off campus. And that has to do with the group project that we are going to do. So I will we're going to start this up quite soon, at least in the beginning of, I want you to be ready to start data collection early October in this project. Meaning that you quite soon now will have to go in groups and assign to groups where, you're doing this yourself. I'm putting up self-assignment thing in Blackboard where you can write yourself in different groups, or you can discuss between yourself and put yourself in different groups. And these groups are to define a research question that's researchable in some way, where it's possible to collect data in a reasonably short period of time, data that has certain qualities, I'll come back to that when we discuss this in groups. But first I want you to assign to groups and think about possible projects to actually do. People have done many projects. People have done fun projects. People have done very relevant projects for their studies. People have done surveys, different things, experiments. Take an example. There was a group that was a pretty fun one. They wanted to check how heavy different operating systems was. There is a term saying Windows was a much heavier operating system than Unix or whatever. So what they did was that they put the operating systems on hard drives, similar hard drives that was to be thrown away, and they made a trebuchet and threw it around on the field and measured how long they could throw it. So that, of course, was a creative interpretation of how heavy an operating system is on the hard drive. Not valid, but could be reliable for all I know. The grass is greener on the other side of the fence. They did borrowed some equipment to measure color and color temperatures and the composition of colors. But people have made honeypots to try to get different hackers around the world to try to hack their computers, and they counted where does the attacks come from at certain points. So, and people have interpreted data they already have for other projects.